CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. Alongside me this evening is Jeff Sargent. Coming up on the program, Salvation Army workers will be allowed to ring their bells during their annual Christmas campaign.
Homeowners in the Okanagan are complaining about the exploding rabbit population.
And on commentary this week, Phil Caudry discusses a study by environmental organizations German Watch and Climate Action Network Europe that ranked Canada as a dismal 53 out of 56 countries in environmental sustainability.
We'll have all this plus arts and your weekend weather forecast coming up in the next hour right here on News 101.
And we're going to go now to Radio Free UBC for a look at what they've been doing this week.
At the airport in Vancouver came a Polish man one day. He threw his laptop computer on the floor, I heard them say. The cop said he's an outlaw, there's a stapler in his grip. We'd best apply some voltage with these tasers on our hips. Tasers on our hips.
This week on Radio Free UBC, we've got a recap of last week's UBC Board of Governors meeting. But first, we've got an interview with Mariana Pyatt of No One Is Illegal on immigration policies and the Alberta tar sands.
Mariana Pyatt is an organizer with No One Is Illegal, a Vancouver group, and they're doing an event later this month about the Tar Sand Project. I was going to ask Mariana first, what is the event and what are the tar sands all about?
So the event that we're having is taking place on Tuesday, December 18th, and it's happening at Harbour Centre at 6:30 p.m. And the event is an information session, an educational session, to let people know about the extraction of oil in the tar sands in Alberta. And the tar sands are it's a project to extract oil from Alberta for trade to the United States and around the world.
No One Is Illegal has been talking a lot about the temporary worker program.
Well, there's a lot of Canadian citizens who are working out in the tar sands, but there's also a temporary worker program that Citizenship and Immigration Canada has put into place, and within this program, workers are coming from predominantly Mexico, Guatemala, Central America, and also now are coming from China. And so how the program works is that citizens from other countries are coming to Canada on a temporary basis to work in areas where there's believed to be a shortage of workers. These people that are coming, because they're not residents or citizens of Canada, are not subject to the same labor standards as a Canadian employee would be. So often they work for wages below the minimum wage. They work more than 8 hours a day. They live in conditions that are substandard to what one would consider to be safe. And they also work in very precarious and unsafe conditions.
So the government facilitates bringing up people who essentially are under the full control of the employer, and if the employer doesn't, if the workers make demands on the employer or anything like that, the employer and the government have a right to deport the worker. The worker has no control over mobility and so on.
Exactly. So the way that the program works is that an employer requests a temporary worker to come up, and so the temporary worker is completely bound to their employer. If they decide they want to quit or at all raise any issues around their employment situation or their living standards, they can easily be fired and then deported.
Mm-hmm. And what about the tar sands all going on in North Alberta, in Alberta? There's been a lot of resistance to the tar sands from First Nations groups, and No One Is Illegal has been talking about that too. Are you guys going to bring that up at the 18th forum?
Yeah, absolutely. At the event on the 18th, we're going to have a couple of presentations, one around how the tar sands came to be and what are the impacts of it, and the other one is around mapping the tar sands in Alberta. We're also going to be screening a film that addresses particularly the impact that the tar sand extraction is happening on indigenous communities in the area. These communities are having their lands taken away and then exploited in a way that is degrading to their traditional practices and to the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are the major... That's one thing more people seem to know about, is the environmental impacts of the tar sand project. What exactly are the major environmental consequences?
Well, I mean, aside from the fact that it is oil extraction, which, as we all know, oil produces significant amounts of pollution, the process in order to get the oil out of the tar sands is also extremely damaging to the environment. Four times more water... for every barrel of oil, four barrels of water are needed in order to assist in the process of extraction. So it's not only the fact that the oil that is being taken out is a pollutant, but it's the practices used to do so that are also very problematic.
In the summer, No One Is Illegal talked about the SPP, the Security Prosperity Partnership. How do the tar sands tie into the international capitalist trade system? And are you guys going to be talking about the international, the global trade system as it relates and as it bears on the tar sands?
The reason why the extraction of the oil in the tar sands is being sped up so much, particularly in the last year, is because under the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, which is a partnership between the United States, Canada, and Mexico, with a focus on economic prosperity and security, there is a request for an increased production of natural resources from Canada and Mexico. So on the Mexico side, we see that the national oil industry is getting closer and closer to becoming privatized. And then on the Canadian side, there is a request for the oil production to be stepped up. So the idea is to create a North American community that is self-sufficient and economically powerful.
Powerful for who exactly?
Particularly for those who are involved in business, transnational corporations. So it's not a benefit to regular people like you and me, but to CEOs and corporate big heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the main organizers for the SPP are, it's a council? What's the name of the council that...
It's the North American Competitiveness Council, which is composed of 30 high-ranking CEOs from 10 from Canada, 10 from the United States, and 10 from Mexico. And they are the ones that provide information and suggestions for the SPP. So they provide the recommendations of what steps should be taken. And then once those get approved by the heads of state, they're also involved in the implementation. So you see a process where directly business is telling government what they should do, and then they're giving the contracts to go ahead with the projects.
So the event is it's December 18th, and you can check it out on the No One Is Illegal website.
NoOneIsIllegal.org, and then just click on Vancouver.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Mariana.
No problem.
For those of you who are unable to attend the Board of Governors meeting on November 28th or were denied access, a number of happenings occurred which need to be addressed and clarified. At approximately 9 a.m., a group of students were denied access to the boardroom by mustachioed security guards in fear that the students would disturb the board's proceedings. Only three students were allowed to observe the meeting, even though there are more than 20 seats available for the public. The board maintained that the students did not register 24 hours beforehand and did not qualify for access as they did not have tickets. However, circumstances were the same at the last board and committee meetings in that a similar-sized group of students showed up without tickets, yet were allowed in. There have also been cases where students have emailed for a ticket well in advance and yet were not listed on the guest list. This shows that the advanced ticket system is already ineffective. The discrimination against students was blatantly revealed when UBC alumni representative Barney, dressed in a suit and in possession of a business card, was allowed into the meeting, despite having openly proclaimed that he too did not have a ticket. The reason given for his entry was that he was the alumni representative on the UBC Campus and Community Planning Committee. However, Margaret Orlowski, a student representative on the same committee, was denied entry. In an effort to appease student concerns regarding the lack of entry, VP Students Brian Sullivan stated that this was not the first time that people have been denied entry to board meetings. A few years ago, about 12 faculty members were also denied entry to a meeting regarding changes in faculty pension plans. At around noon, when the board finally addressed the plans for U Boulevard, both Jeff Friedrich and Darren Peets, the student representatives on the Board of Governors, tried to lobby for the students' right to observe the meeting. After talking around the issue for a couple of minutes, the board's chair, Brad Bennett, finally terminated conversation by simply and emphatically stating no to student access. Beyond Brad Bennett's outburst, a number of board members conveyed their displeasure with incorporating student participation into the planning process. Specifically, Barry LaPointe stated that, quote, students will come and go, and the time is now for the board to act and create a legacy. This quote is word for word, and I'll repeat it again. Quote, students will come and go, and the time is now for the board to act and create a legacy. With respects to this comment specifically, there is no real gray area for misinterpretation. The individual members of the board are more preoccupied with their own personal legacy than addressing the collective priorities of the student population. Ultimately, the board unanimously approved the motion to allocate $400,000 for the architects of U Boulevard to revise their open space proposal. Obviously, at this moment, it's unclear how the plan will rematerialize, but considering these new developments, it's probably more of the same bullshit. Thanks to Andrew for his report.
And thank you to Radio Free UBC for that piece. Now, with a look at other local news, here are Carrie Baptist, Tracy Fuller, and Leanne Yu.
A Richmond Aquatic Center has been closed by health officials due to health concerns. Hundreds of swimmers and coaches reported health problems following a swim meet last weekend at Watermania. The Vancouver Coastal Health Authority made its decision to temporarily shut the facility late Thursday evening. They say the center will be closed until the air quality improves. A senior environmental health officer said an investigation has shown that the water quality at Watermania was fine, but victims reported coughs, tightness in the chest, skin and eye irritations, including peeling skin following the swim meet. The health authority says it appears that the ventilation system was malfunctioning, resulting in a lack of air, causing chloramines in the air. It is possible that the swimmers were releasing chlorine into the air as well. Interestingly, there were no complaints from public swimmers who were at Watermania during the swim meet.
Health officials say the cloudy tap water in Vancouver is safe to drink. The water is murky because of debris from a recent storm in water reservoirs, but no boil water advisory has been issued. Dr. Patricia Daly from Vancouver Coastal Health says those with immune system complications should consider drinking water from alternative sources, however. She says because there were no complications with organisms in the water last year, the health authority is confident about this year's turbidity levels, but adds it's always a good idea for people with compromised immune systems to be extra careful with drinking water.
A human rights complaint against furniture giant IKEA was dismissed by a BC tribunal today. The complaint was filed 1 year after a price misunderstanding that happened last July, when Francois Moussa was mistakenly charged $15 rather than $20 for a comforter. He accused the cashier of not believing he could pay the full amount for the item because he was black. An argument ensued, and other employees testified that Moussa yelled at other employees and staff members. IKEA security tapes show Moussa leaning towards the cashier, forcing her to move away. The Human Rights Tribunal abandoned the case, citing Moussa's unwillingness to testify and the lengthy delay between the incident and the formal complaint as the reasons for their dismissal.
The BC government is refusing to pay for a playground for a new Vancouver elementary school. Instead, parents of the school children are expected to raise thousands of dollars if they want their kids to have some place to play. The province is spending $9 million to replace Charles Dickens Elementary as part of a program to protect schools against earthquakes. But parents are outraged the province is willing to spend millions on the school and nothing on a playground to go with it. All the school can do is apply for a competitive $20,000 grant, leaving the bulk of the $70,000 playground bill for the parents. Lead parent fundraiser Claudia Schoberg says it's not unfair, but ridiculous in light of the fact the BC government has some serious initiatives combating childhood obesity. So far, the parents have managed to raise $31,000.
The Vancouver Airport Authority has announced a $1.4 million spending increase to improve services for international visitors. This follows the death of Polish immigrant Robert Jakanski on October 14th. Changes to the airport include terminal-wide access to translation services, improved multilingual signage with pictograms and translations in as many as 20 languages. It also includes a new in-flight arrivals video shown on all international flights arriving at YVR. The airport authority hopes that these improvements will prevent an incident like Jakanski's death from ever happening again, making airport navigation easier for international passengers who may not speak English. All right, we're going to take a quick break now, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
Ho, 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 Vancouver. It's time for the Mint Records Just in Time for Christmas Party. On December 14th and December 15th, the Mint Records Just in Time for Christmas Party will take place at the Railway Club with an unprecedented number of bands performing. Get there early because the first 75 paid entrants each night will receive a gift. Plus, there will be no advance tickets.
Friday to December the 14th features the Pack AD, Bella, Immaculate Machine, Young and Sexy, and the Buttless Champs. Whereas Saturday, December the 15th, you'll be seeing Vancouver, the Choir Practice, the Awkward Stage, Carolyn Mark, and the Ramblin' Ambassadors. And both nights feature CITR's own DJ Bryston spinning tunes in the back lounge.
The Mint Records Just in Time for Christmas Party, Friday, December 14th and Saturday, December 15th at the Railway Club, 579 Dunsmuir Street. First come, first serve.
Opening band Friday is Kellarissa, and on Saturday it's Hot Panda.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:24. Now, with a look at other local and BC news, we're joined in studio by News 101 reporters Carrie Baptist and Tracy Fuller.
After reaching an agreement with shopping malls around the Lower Mainland, Salvation Army representatives will be allowed to ring their bells during the annual Christmas Kettle campaign. Managers of both Oak Ridge and Lougheed malls, among other shopping destinations, had expressed their concerns over the constant bell ringing of Kettle volunteers, calling it, quote, annoying. While Salvation Army Major Gordon Armstrong acknowledges that the constant ringing can get annoying, he says it is a proven fact that donations to his organization are down when representatives can't ring their bells. As a result of the ban, province-wide donation totals are down by $50,000 so far this year.
After meeting with officials from the Canadian Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences yesterday, Vancouver Mayor Sam Sullivan is certain Vancouver will host the 2009 Juno Awards. The two-hour Juno show celebrates and awards Canadian music and is sometimes thought of as the Grammys of the North. Events around the show are scheduled as a four-day weekend at the end of March or the beginning of April every year. The event would cost the city $350,000, but the mayor thinks the event is worth the price because it attracts so many people and especially, quote, decision makers in the arts and culture scene. The 2008 Junos will be held in Calgary, Alberta this year.
A Census Canada report shows that Vancouver is not attracting a large number of immigrants as it previously has. The 2006 census is the second consecutive census to show the decline in immigrant arrivals to Vancouver. Immigrants from Hong Kong were at 25,000 in the 1996 census, but only 3,000 in 2006. Despite the decline, reports show that ethnic diversity is still increasing. Richmond still has the highest proportion of foreign-born residents out of any Canadian city, sitting at 57%. In addition, more than half of Burnaby residents are foreign-born, with the majority coming from China or India. Interestingly, while immigrant numbers from abroad are declining in Vancouver, numbers from the U.S. are quite high. Over 8,000 Americans immigrated to British Columbia between 2001 and 2006. This number has doubled since 2001.
The Supreme Court of Canada has dismissed the appeal of a Vancouver man, paving the way for his extradition to the United States, where he will face murder charges. John Graham is accused of killing Anna Mae Pictou-Aquash in South Dakota in 1976, with help from another man. The second man, Arlo Looking Cloud, was convicted for first-degree murder in 2005 for his role in the incident. The two men and the victim were all members of the American Indian Movement, which seized control of the city of Wounded Knee, South Dakota, in 1973, an occupation which ended in a bloody shootout with FBI agents killing two agents. The American Indian Movement is accused of having ordered the death of Pictou-Aquash because of suspicions she was an FBI informant. Graham maintains his innocence in lower courts, and lower courts agreed the evidence against him had holes in it, but that it was enough to justify extradition.
And residents of several cities in the Okanagan are calling for local governments to address the exploding rabbit population. Homeowners in Kelowna, Penticton, and Vernon have complained that the large population of bunnies is destroying gardens and trees. Locals report 40 to 60 rabbits passing through their yards on any given day. Rabbit breeders in the area are warning that the rabbit population has reached a critical mass, and if the situation is not addressed, the number of bunnies will continue to grow exponentially, threatening the valley's farms. One suggestion is that the government trap the rabbits and relocate the genders to different areas so they can't continue to reproduce. Kelowna has hired a consultant to study the local rabbit population and make recommendations. However, Kelowna Parks manager Joe Creeron maintained it's not the city's responsibility to cull or control the rabbits on private property. Creeron says that if landowners are concerned about the number of rabbits on their property, they should contact a pest control company. We're now going to take another break now, but when we come back, we'll update you on national and international news. Stay with us. News 101 will continue right after this.
Weird. Interested in NGOs or the nonprofit sector? Want to teach in another country? How about a position in the commerce or engineering sector? Do you want to travel abroad and have a life-changing experience? Isaac UBC offers different internships for all kinds of specialties. We are looking for students interested in fields such as the HIV/AIDS pandemic, community empowerment, business administration, education, environment, and sustainability, and much more. If you're interested in working abroad or helping out on campus, please contact ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. That's ubc.aiesec@gmail.com. It's up to you.
Sometimes I feel special, like an apostle of Jesus or something.
And how does it make you feel?
Like I want to hustle!
Yes, I see.
You don't need a psychologist to know that what you crave is Apostle of Hustle, the ultimate indie rock band. CITR presents Apostle of Hustle Saturday, December 8th at the Plaza Club on Granville Street. Come out for a chance to hear them play new music from their album National Anthem of Nowhere.
That'll cure anybody.
My professional opinion would be to recommend Apostle of Hustle. Yes.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots global unembedded international independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Five 31, and the news continues on CITR. Now with a look at national news, here again are Carrie Baptist and Tracy Fuller.
According to a new study that ranks industrialized countries on their climate change performance, Canada is near the bottom of the barrel, coming in as the number 4 worst polluting company in the world. The study, released today by the organizations German Watch and Climate Action Network Europe, compared 56 nations that produce nearly 90% of the world carbon emissions. Canada's ranking shows a two-spot slide from last year's rankings, where it placed 51st out of the 56 countries. Taking the top spot was Saudi Arabia, followed by the United States and Australia. Matthew Bramley of the Pembina Institute says Canada is not making a serious effort to cut its greenhouse gas pollution. He also pointed out that Canada's position as at the climate summit in Bali is one of hypocrisy. He suggested that Environment Minister John Baird's expectations that the other big emitters meet targets for a new treaty is unrealistic because of Canada's lack of effort. The study was released on the heels of the beginning of the UN Climate Summit in Bali, Indonesia. Phil Caudry will take a look at what is setting Canada back in his commentary coming up on the program.
Conservative MP James Moore received an apology today for allegations of looking at so-called soft porn in the House of Commons. While Parliament was in session Tuesday night, NDP MP Irene Matheson claimed she saw Moore looking at pictures of scantily clad women on his laptop computer. The next day, Matheson rose on a point of order in the House to draw attention to the images Moore was looking at. Matheson added the act was disrespectful of women and of Parliament. She then demanded an apology from Moore. Moore later clarified the pictures were of his girlfriend. Matheson promised she would apologize for the embarrassing accusations at the earliest opportunity, but she was not present in the House on Thursday. Today she admitted that she should have approached Moore for an explanation before rising in the House. Both parties are now focused on putting the matter behind them.
All right, it's time for another break here on News 101. Stay tuned for commentary and much more coming up on the other side.
Are you a UBC student taking first year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.
Whoa! How does it work?
It's on a first-come, first-served basis, and there's no need to sign up. Just show up with your books and your questions.
Whoa! When does it happen?
Monday to Thursday from 3 to 7 at the Sub Pacific Spirit Cafeteria, located beside the Starbucks.
Whoa! A+, here I come.
Years in a Chinese jail for sending an email.
Threats against a mother in Honduras because she spoke up for justice.
Jail, torture, and rape for a student election worker in the Congo.
On Human Rights Day, December 10, Amnesty International gives you the power to stop these abuses.
Go to amnesty.ca. Join our global write-a-thon for justice and freedom. Write for rights at amnesty.ca.
Welcome back to News 101. It's now time for commentary, and this week Phil discusses the German Watch and Climate Action Network Europe study that ranks Canada a dismal 53 out of 56 countries in environmental sustainability attempts.
A study conducted that ranks countries based on their climate change performances has put Canada near dead last on the list. The study was conducted by German Watch and Climate Action Network Europe. It compared 56 countries that produce 90% of the world's carbon dioxide emissions. The study ranked countries based on the amount of emissions they produced in the last year, the amount of reductions they made to their emission levels, and the strength of their climate change policies. Canada joined a group of environmentally unfriendly countries that included Saudi Arabia, the U.S., Australia, and Luxembourg. Sweden, Germany, Iceland, Mexico, and India rounded out the top five most environmentally friendly countries. To make matters worse, Canada dropped from last year's ranking of 51 to 53 out of the 56 countries ranked. So while the Conservative government has made efforts to green up their act, including massive funding to civic public transportation and infrastructure, it simply is not mustering enough to propel Canada to a higher ranking. The rhetoric is not matched by government action. There are three major reasons for this. Firstly, and most evidently, the Conservative government is simply choosing to not make sustainability an issue of contention. If you take a look at the financial backers of the Conservative Party, they include big businesses, especially from the oil and gas sectors of the economy, that have a lot to lose from increased environmental regulations. If anything, Harper has done more to promote environmental sustainability than he intended to when he first moved into 24 Sussex. Secondly, the Conservatives suffered from a flawed blueprint to tackle environmental issues that they inherited from the past Liberal government. As much as the Conservatives are ramping up their rhetoric on environmental issues, the past Liberal government was twice as bad. Paul Martin and Jacques Chrétien would sign international agreements like the Kyoto Treaty and then neglect to meet their obligations. This has put the Conservatives in a tough situation. Canada is expected to reduce their 1990 emission levels by 2012 by 6%. Due to Liberal inaction, this makes it difficult for the Conservatives to meet these obligations without severe economic consequences. It's not unlike an athlete starting a marathon when half of the athlete's opponents are half finished the race and the athlete hasn't conditioned for the race at all. It's a recipe for disaster. So while Harper has no hesitation in blaming Liberal inaction for his government's current environmental predicaments, and he often exaggerates its influence on current policy, his rhetoric has more than a grain of truth to it. Third, and possibly most importantly, Canadians are unwilling to make lifestyle changes that are necessary to improve Canada's environmental record. The Conservative government can implement as many incentive plans as they wish, like the old car graveyard schemes that give consumers credit towards a newer, more environmentally sound vehicle when they retire their old vehicles. However, the bottom line is that Canadians still love their big cars and houses. These lifestyle choices lead to complementary infrastructure choices like more highways and roads, thus furthering our car-based society. So while the Canadian government's rhetoric does not match its record, neither do the opinions of Canadians. While the environment is the number one issue for a majority of Canadians, there is no groundswell of action to change their lifestyles to match their opinions. This is completely unacceptable. If our European friends, such as Germany, can take responsibility and voluntarily choose to be more sustainable, then so can we. If we can accept higher taxes to fund a universal healthcare system, there is no reason why we can't reduce our lifestyle just a little bit for another public good. For News 101 Commentary, I'm Phil Caudry.
And thank you very much for that, Phil. Our producer, Leanne Yu, is now here with a look at our oddity of the week. And we're going all the way to Cyprus this time, Leanne.
Well, Jeff, a self-proclaimed witch was convinced of fraud Thursday for taking cash from a man to lift a deadly spell. The ingredients for protection? An egg, his briefs, and a urine sample. 69-year-old Hairi Rezvangoglu will serve 20 days in prison in accordance to a Nicosia court ruling. Court officials says she exploited 34-year-old delivery man Thanos Savidi's vulnerable psychological and emotional state. She charged him 500 Cyprus pounds, the equivalent of about 1,200 Canadian dollars, to lift a spell cast by his enemies. Savidis met Rezvangoglu on a street when she asked for some of his cookies. She offered to tell his fortune if he brought her the money along with a plate, a spoon, an egg, his underwear, and a bottle of urine. During the next meeting, the supposed witch told Savidis he would die in his sleep unless he sought her magical protection at the cost of an additional 5,000 Cyprus pounds, about 12,000 Canadian. The court has ordered a full refund on Savidis' behalf.
That's quite the list of ingredients.
It is.
A rather nasty-smelling list of ingredients,
yeah, that is an interesting combination. That's a good point, Jeff.
Why... Now, who knows? Maybe this is part of his religious beliefs. I don't know. But you would think someone would know better than to spend $12,000 on, or even more, on something like this. That's a lot of money.
Yeah,
I'm almost thinking that the court is ruling it, you know, to have a refund. But, you know, that's...
Right. Well,
fire,
I think
beware.
She really did well to literally scare the pants off of him. I mean, he was afraid for his life, and I guess the money was worth it in his opinion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to avoid being smote by his enemies.
Yeah.
He must have some really nasty enemies. That's all I have to say. He went to that much trouble.
As a delivery man, you wonder what he delivers.
Well,
there's a lot more to this story than doesn't meet the eye.
I think so.
Or than meets the eye, I should say.
I think you're right.
Maybe we don't want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Leanne, thanks very much for that story. All right, it's break time again, but coming up next, the Arts Report with Katie Fitzpatrick. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
BCSportsBeat.ca is your source on the internet dedicated to providing you with information on professional and amateur sports in your province. You'll find game scores, team updates, and the perspective of the athletes through in-depth interviews, all at bcsportsbeat.ca. bcsportsbeat.ca, your source for BC sports.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR. I'm Rita Farkas alongside Jeff Sargent, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Right now it is 5:41 and time for the arts and Katie Fitzpatrick.
Hello and welcome to your 5-Minute Arts Beat here on News 101. I'm Katie Fitzpatrick. Lots of stuff coming up in theater as we gear up for the holiday season. The Arts Club is doing their two holiday-related shows, one of them being the musical Beauty and the Beast and the other being It's a Wonderful Life. If you want to go check out It's a Wonderful Life, I very much recommend getting your tickets dealt with ahead of time as soon as possible because from what I've been hearing, they've been selling out all week this week and I went to check out the opening night and my tickets had actually been given away out of a fluke, so I wanted to have a review for you all today and I couldn't have one. So it sounds like it's a good show, though. It's been getting good reviews across the board. So if you want to check it out, like I said, make sure you go ahead and secure your tickets ahead of time and arrive nice and early. Other things going on in theater right now, there's How the Other Half Loves, Alan Ackburn's comedy of marital misunderstandings, starring Nancy Ebert, Mark Gash, and Paul Kloegman. That's till December 8th at the Presentation House Theater in North Vancouver. There's also Richard III, William Shakespeare's tragedy about a prince with an unbridled lust for power, directed by Scott Bellis and starring Bob Fraser and the students of Studio 58. That's at Studio 58 at Langara College, and it runs till December 9th. At the Jericho Arts Center on Discovery, close to UBC here, there's A Moon for the Misbegotten. United Players presents Eugene O'Neill's love story set on a farm in 1920s Connecticut. Also showing right now is The Ecstasy of Rita Joe, Canadian playwright George Riga's classic drama about an Aboriginal woman who moves to the city and finds herself caught between two cultures. That's till December 8th at the Firehall Arts Center on Cordova. I saw that a couple weeks ago, and it's very interesting, definitely worth checking out. Finally, in theater, there's Reservations for Four. Pegleg Jack Productions Co-op presents Michael P. Northey's comedy about dating. That's till December 16th at the Havana on 1212 Commercial. In dance, there's Baseline. Edom presents an improvised performance with American dance artist Nancy Stark-Smith and Edom's artistic director Peter Bingham. That's December 7th at 8th at the Edom Studio Theater on East 8th. In music, there's Solidarity Notes. Vancouver Labor Choir performs songs of worker struggles, social peace, and justice, arranged in four-part harmony and conducted by Earl Peach. That's to December 8th at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Church. So if you're interested in those issues or just in choir performances in general, you probably want to go check that out. Another thing going on in music is Teatro dell'Udito. Standing Wave presents a concert curated by composer Giorgio Magnanensi, featuring the premiere of a new work by him, plus excerpts and sonic collages of music by Mahler, Neil Young, Monaural, and others. In literary events, there's New Star Books joint launch. Launch of George Bowring's Governor General Award-winning Burning Water and Bruce Serafin's memoir, Stardust. That's at Pulp Fiction Books on Main Street, and that's Wednesday, the 12th of December. If you're wanting to check out galleries, a few new things going on. One interesting one is Port City Connect, From Burnaby to Brooklyn, Cultural Perspectives of Youth from the East and West Coasts. That's till January 13th at the Burnaby Art Gallery at Deer Lake. There's also Afua Granger, Paintings Exploring Skin, Transience, and Beauty. That's till January 30th at Aurum Argentum. That's at the Railspur Alley on Granville Island. Finally, there's Bite Size, original and eclectic collection of smaller works priced under $12,000. Still a little bit too much for me, but maybe you want to go check it out anyway. That's at the Elias Lewis Gallery on West 2nd. If you're wanting to check out movies, at Fifth Avenue right now, they're showing Margot at the Wedding, the new one with Nicole Kidman, the Bob Dylan biopic I'm Not There, Milarepa, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, No Country for Old Ben, and still showing The Darjeeling Limited. If you're wanting to rent a film this week, I checked out an interesting one recently called Paris Je T'aime. It's a film which features various directors, which are all invited to do a short film about Paris. And, of course, a huge cast of actors as well, including a lot of famous American actors and famous French actors. Some of these small films were very well done, especially in the beginning, and they range from comedic to touching to depressing to educational to totally surreal. Others, however, were quite terrible, especially the one which featured Elijah Wood and vampires, oddly enough, and Wes Craven's, which had a lot of forced dialogue and a really cheesy ghost. These two short films paired together made it feel like we had moved from subtle snippets of life land to crappy supernatural world. Nonetheless, I would still recommend the film. The good bits are good, and the bad bits are only 5 minutes long anyway. Plus, it's interesting to compare the film styles and find out why you might prefer one film to any other. Once again, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick with your 5-Minute Art Spot here on News 101.
And thank you, Katie. Before we go this evening, we'll check in with meteorologist Selena Ferris for a look at your weekend weather forecast.
A high-pressure system just off the coast is preventing any storms from moving in over the region. This will lead to a calm and mostly clear weekend. Saturday will be sunny with a high of 3 degrees and a low down to minus 3 Saturday night. Sunday we'll see a few clouds roll in, but it should remain dry with a high of 4 degrees. Next week we'll get wet again late Monday, with showers continuing on till Tuesday as that high-pressure ridge breaks down. This should allow some snow to start accumulating on the local mountains, so it may be time to wax your skis and board. That's your weekend weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
All right, thank you very much, Selena. That is our program for December 7th, 2007. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news at citr.ca.
Leanne, you produce this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, I'm Rita Farkas.
And I'm Jeff Sargent. Thank you for listening. Coming up next, it is CITR Sports Friday. I'll be on in just a few moments, and we're going to have a recap of the season of the Thunderbirds so far. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.